Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. We're here at the Sirius XM Studios live in the lobby at the Wynn in Las Vegas. Man, do I have a Hall of Fame staff here with me today. The incredible Nick Lowry, Hall of Fame NFL disappointed Kansas City Chief, but also an author and philanthropist is really why I love you, Nick. I got plenty of football players in my life, but nobody has a heart as big as you. And thank you for everything you do and showing up here.
What you see in me? It's because it's in you.
I love that. Thank you so much. Then we have the PGA coach of the PGA. He is currently coaching the number one player, amateur player in the world. He'll be caddying at the Masters for a 35th year at the Masters. The incredible Virgil Herring. Welcome back to hosting Office Hours.
It's an honor to be here, buddy. I'm super excited.
And I got my big anchor man, somebody fully qualified to do so. Rene Rodriguez, one of the best coaches, mentors, and teachers, authors in the world, and he has stepped on the stages with the biggest names, and it's always a pleasure to share a stage or a screen with you, Rene. Thanks for joining.
Always good to be here, brother.
Speaking of the biggest of the big, this guy I've known before he even knew that I knew him. We grew up together in San Diego, and I admire him so much, and it's fun because when people are truly successful, they root you to the top, some of them, but they all want to see you drop. And I've had that drop and experienced all the people that said, I knew you could do it, when they never really did say that they knew I could do it. And then when I failed, they said, oh, I knew you would do that too. And Grant Cardone, worth over $1 billion, he's leading the way in entrepreneurship, in my opinion. He works and changes lives. And you could say what you want to try to drive this guy down. But I will tell you, I talked to thousands of entrepreneurs, thousands, and a lot of them only have one thing to say. Grant Cardone changed my life. He changed the way I looked at business. He taught me how to do it. He didn't just give me theory. He's not a 19-year-old life coach talking from some spout. This is the real deal. And if you haven't seen, heard, or listened to Grant Cardone, you're about to have a great treat for the next 40 minutes or so. Grant Cardone, welcome to Office Hours.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you allowing me into your office, and it's great to be at Steve Wynn's hotel and not lose any money.
Yeah, tell me about it. I got to stay away from the other side of the lobby. But Grant, you know, your success is in a variety of different places, and that to me shows me that you have a formula or a framework to success. And what I've learned about the 10X program is it's really about changing the meaning of your past. So many of us limit our own self-image by a meaning that we give the failures, mistakes, and setbacks. You teach people to find the light, the love, and the lesson, the protection in it, and use it in your own devotional divine direction. What are some of the secrets that you teach in all the different facets of your business to change that meaning of our failures and setbacks to get us to where we want to be?
Yeah, I think you know, first of all, your panel, your esteemed panel, it's great to be with you guys and learn from you today. The divine thing is very, like a lot of people don't see me in that light, but to me, I have been, and I want to believe that all people have this, is they have this divine discontentment, this I'm not satisfied phenomenon happening that ends up, the symptoms of it could be depression or fear or anxieties, or, you know, you're just not happy. That I have suffered from this phenomenon my whole life, and I choose to believe that it's a divine, it's divinity. It's God saying, hey, Grant, you can do more. That's why you're not satisfied with where you're at. And this is a blessed, this gift has blessed me with the ability to transition to different industries and to continue to grow even through seasons. You know, the concept of seasons, right? I'm like, yeah, but I don't really want a long winter. You know, do I really have to go through a lot of suffering, or could I just self-impose this knowing that the end of my career is going to happen? Look, everything has a shelf life, right? So it's going to happen. So why don't I terminate it before it happens? I know it's coming, and transition to the next thing and prepare for that. You know, dude, I just want to be great, bro. Like I could have a t-shirt. I just want to be great. And then when I get great, I want to be great it's something else.
You see a common denominator of all the billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, entertainers that I know. And it's exactly that. It's a desire that they must be what they can be, no matter what they want to become. And no better person to talk to than a Hall of Fame kicker, the NFL historical hero of mine, Nick Lowry. Although his Chiefs aren't doing so well now, he understands the subtleties of success and the desire that you must be what you can be.
Well, you're such a deeply seeing human being, so I appreciate your positivity. But Grant, you know, my story, I know you can relate to, given your last comment. I was cut by 8 teams 11 times, and being used to running on the field and kicking something in 1.27 seconds and being held accountable. Because as a kicker, unlike most things in life, it's very easy to measure your success or failure. And so, as we were just talking about, I had to fight through that imposter syndrome. I don't belong here. Maybe it's just a dream. And what I noticed was every time I got back up, and this is in my book called Shameless Promotion, Naked and Alone with 80,000 People. It's that incredible sense of being vulnerable. And what I noticed is every time I got back up, I shed a layer of fear and imposter syndrome. And so I'd love your comments on that, because what happens is you make it through, as David was saying, to that place where everybody goes, yeah, I knew you'd make it. But the hardest part is then to sustain that every year when the people take Grant Cardone for granted and you don't get that ego gratification, but you fuel yourself to keep growing. What I did was I worked in the White House in the off season for 3 presidents to have a completely different experience, to keep myself humble and learn new things. And I've heard you use the word learn from us. I'd like to learn from you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me, to have how many 75,000 people watch you hit it or miss, half of them are pulling against you, right?
Absolutely. And they're saying very sweet things to you, by the way, on the sidelines.
Especially if they're ego.
Yeah, I mean, even when you make it, they say, yeah, it can't be that hard.
Right, exactly.
Right.
It's just a kicker, right?
But what you're doing is so complex, and yet you're trying to be available and accessible to people that don't know a hundredth of what you do. And yet you make your teaching accessible so that the little guy, which is to me where we are now, the little guy that got squashed in COVID with millions of small businesses being crushed, and you're helping people find their confidence again to not be the imposters.
Yeah, you know what's interesting to me in business, if you brag about what you did, like if you show somebody in business, there's no 3 points, right? There's no 3.6 points, game winner, trophy, Super Bowl ring. There's none of that. In business, if I go buy a $250 million building and then post it, hey, guys, we just closed this $250 million deals and I'm a regular guy, I'm bragging. But in sports, you're like, you're celebrating. And so I would just tell more of the business people out there, man, make sure that you're letting people know about your example. Because when I see other people successful, I'm like, wow, maybe I can do more too.
That's why we have you here, Grant. That's why I love having you on the show.
Love it.
Because I want to show people how to get to and where you can get to and the directions to get there. Another exposed area is golf. I love golf as a below average college football player. There was all this subjectivity that I used to lie to myself. If I was as big as Nick Lowry, I would have been a professional football player. Warren Moon, Troy Aikman, and Steve Young, who I represented. I'm like, yeah, if I was built like you guys, I'd be. Well, the truth is, that's not true. And golf is great because no matter what size, shape, or skill you have, there's just a score. And this quantifiable measurement is so critical. And Virgil, you deal with that score all the time. Just shot a 69 recently. And no matter who you were playing with, it could have been someone on the PGA Tour. You could have beat them that day. And your score tells them you're better than them on the day. You have won, and it needs to be celebrated.
Well, I think at the end of the day, what we're always trying to do is figure out how we can be the best that we can be. And as soon as you stop comparing yourself to anybody else other than who you were yesterday, mm-hmm. you're wasting your time. And as a coach who's really, people come to see me because they want to get better at a game. So I always say people move from I hope I can to I believe I can, and then I know I can. And if there's anything that you've done, Grant, is you've clearly demonstrated that you took a passion and you learned how to do it right. And when you learned how to do it right, you believed you could do it. But when I actually, one of the books that really made an impact on me was your 10X book, maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And it helped me understand the difference between being able to do it right or going at it so ferociously and with a level of resilience and perseverance so that you can't do it wrong. Mm. That's when things take off for you. And I don't think there's a bigger gap in performance anywhere from moving from believe to knowing. When you talk about, when you think about those things and how you conduct your businesses, what does that mean to you? And how do you feel like you 10X'd yourself and in a way that you never thought you could do it maybe when you were 25 years old?
Oh, man, look, everything that I've accomplished, I've never considered any of this possible, likely, or didn't even think with it. This is the great mistake that I've made in my life. I think, Dave, you and I have talked about this before, actually. Like, I never thought, believed I could do any of this stuff. And then, you know, you show up and then you do something and you're like, wow, that wasn't as hard as I thought it was, you know? And you know, first time I got a bicycle, I was terrified of it. 3 weeks later, I was popping willies. Yeah, you know, 8 weeks later, I wanted a motorcycle. So it's like you have to just get in the game. You know, you said something about I made my passions into something. The truth is, the first thing that I got into was a sales career, and I hated it. I had no passion for it, which is, by the way, reverse passion. If you hate something, that's passion too.
Good point.
And I figured out how to convert that hate, because I didn't have any other choices. Like, I wasn't going to be a ball player. I wasn't going to be a basketball player, baseball player. I had no talent. I had no natural talent. But I did have this, I want to be something, like this unbelievable, it was a little light then. The light's gotten brighter as I've experienced successes, but it's, I want to be somebody better. You talked about the compare yourself to yesterday's self, right? And I had this sales job that I hated, and I couldn't get any other jobs. So I'm like, you know what? You need to figure out how to be good at this job. And then the next thing you know, like literally 90 days later, I got good at it. Then I got better at it. Then I became successful at it, and I didn't hate it anymore. So maybe the passion comes after the knowing you did the work to get good at something. And then passion shows up as a reward.
Passion as a reward. Renee, you know a lot about attaching to those rewards and helping people to guide them to where they think they want to be or better, especially on stages. Nobody provides more stages than Grant. I know you guys know each other, have shared stages together. What are you thinking?
You know, I'm looking at this one, you know, I'm watching this and thinking, okay, I've been doing this for 30 years. And I think, you know, best-selling book, speak 230 times a year, but when I talk to people like you, people on the stage, people like Grant, and here's my question for you, Grant. I'm convinced that people that are at different levels have a different philosophy of time. We have the same 24 hours, but you're worth over $1 billion. I'm not. I've done a lot of cool shit, but it's not a billion. And we have the same 24 hours. And so here's my question to you. What is that philosophy, that belief system that maybe you don't share, but is internal, but how you view time and how you, whether it's how you protect it, how you decide what is and what isn't in your time frame? Because the only measure of time for me is life, right? Because if you're wasting my time, I say, okay, stop wasting my life, because it's the only measurable piece that I can associate to time. What is your thought on time and how do you look at it?
You know, this is I'm curious to why you're asking me this right now, because I woke up with this question today. I'm not going to use his name because he hadn't given me okay to do it, but super, super famous actor, like as big in the world as you can imagine. This guy measures every minute of the day. And I don't do that. I do not measure my minutes like that. Like, and I'm waking up this morning with a little envy, like, man, maybe I should. I wish I was more disciplined. Oh my God, this guy, you know. But it's not what I do. Now, what I do is I do measure money. I spend a lot of time looking at money. So, and if you know the old adage about time is money, it's not money is time. It's time is money. I remember when I was speaking 230 days a year, dude, and I was like, there's no way the math ever works here.
Right on. I try to tell Renee that.
Renee, no matter what they pay you, bro, it don't math out.
Well, I was going to ask you, though, because you said that there's money can be a reflection of your life energy, too, right? The where you put your attention and time. So when you measure money, how does that associate to your time?
Well, look, if I have billion-dollar targets, and I do, okay, I know what my targets are today, and they're much more than that, then what I do is I take that and divide it by how much time I have. And for those of you who don't care whether it's $1 billion or $100 million, or you're not motivated by money, it is a score. It is simply what everybody's been talking about, a score. I don't have a three-point field goal to kick. I don't have I can't dunk the ball, so I can't measure like that. I can only measure in money. By the way, all ball players will end up having to measure in money too, because there's going to be a day where you can't kick anymore and you can't throw and you can't dunk. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take targets, some impossible target, whatever the impossible target is, and I'm going to multiply it times 10. It's just a little game I play. It's an arbitrary. There's no science behind it. And so let's say it was $1 billion target. I'm going to say, no, the target's now 10 billion, and I'm going to divide by time, years, months, days, seconds. And then I'm going to build the business out of the math rather than building a business and chasing $1 billion. So like if I need a plane to take me from here to Dubai, from Miami to Dubai, I'm not going to go build it. I'm going to figure out, hey, I want to go to Dubai. What goes nonstop to Dubai? And then I'm going to go, you know, either buy that plane or charter the plane or hop on the plane. I'll call Dave. Dave, hey, bring the plane up, Dave.
We're good in the domestic side of that, but I've learned internationally those bedrooms on Emirates work better. But more importantly, I love...
Well, you're comparing it to maybe something else.
Exactly. I've been married 28 years. Nonetheless, those bedrooms are still very, very, very comfortable nonetheless. Very convincing to a marriage. Math is so important. I put measurement to things because then I can improve it.
Yes.
One of the reasons I love real estate, and I've done very well and lost it all and done really well again, because I like the math and the history of real estate. And when I say the history of real estate, my mom gave me some great advice when I was little. She made me study history, and I kept asking her, why am I reading Ben Franklin's autobiography? Because this shit is boring. And she said, David, history will show you one thing, that human nature never changes. And if you understand human nature, I promise you, everything you desire economically in your life will come to you if you understand human nature. And although she never made any money as a second grade teacher, it was extraordinary business advice. And understanding the law and how the laws in America have been created to protect the landowner and the advantages there and the tax architecture, which I'm into now with real estate and what's going on. You are one of the leading sources of human nature in real estate. You have done extremely well and continue to do so. I know you know the math of real estate. You teach it to so many people, and they all, if they follow the math, they seem to succeed. Things are uncertain in real estate always, but they are secular and mathematical. Is there some math that you can share with us that you feel is important here coming up in the next few years?
Yeah, sure, man. I mean, you got a president that loves real estate. He hates banks and he hates taxes.
There's the math.
That's part of the math. it is impossible to build affordable housing in America. Like, I don't need an AI or quantum physics to tell me it's impossible for anyone to build affordable housing in America. America will become renters. You have 355 million people in America. We will slowly become more renters than owners of real estate. I think it's one of the best investment classes still on the planet today. It's very, very predictable. America will also continue to print money. As you print money, real estate values actually don't go up. What happens is the value of the dollar goes down, and so it pushes this other value up to keep up with the devaluation of what money buys. And so, I think we end up with, I guess we got a third of the population. America is baby boomers. Dave, you're a boomer, right?
Yes, sir. On the very early edge.
You're a little older than me. And so a third of baby boomers have already owned a home, and they don't want to own another one. They would prefer to rent by choice, by the way. Here's a fun stat. 11% of all millionaires are renters today by choice. And a third stat is you got the other third, 80 million, I guess, Gen Z, Gen X, whatever the gen is, the lost gen. You have those people that are, they don't want to own a home. They don't want to own a lawnmower. They don't want to own a car. They would rather just use things. They're not the old baby boomer that says, I have to own my car or my house. Okay. We're just going into transition. And so I would say anybody that, and I'm not talking about a single family home here. I think the single family home is a terrible investment and it shouldn't even be considered an investment. And the last thing I'll say is just, you got a 50-year mortgage that's coming. It's going to be great for people that buy real estate the way I buy it, large rental properties. You have Jerome Powell that will be replaced. Interest rates will go to zero by June to October of next year. And people that invest in real estate the way I do are gonna make tremendous amounts of money here in the next 2 to 3, 4, 5 years.
You heard the math here. Why speak 230 days a year when you can take all that money you've made, put it into a 50-year mortgage with a multi-unit, and let the dollar itself take care of your margin? Yeah, it's math, man. It's
Renee, I was speaking 200 days a year. I think they were paying me, I don't know, I was being paid like $15,000 to $25,000 plus travel. I was making, you know, $4 or $5 million a year on the road every day. And I did one real estate deal that paid me $5.3 million. I'm like, okay, I'm done.
So for those that want to,
and by the way, paid no taxes on the real estate.
That's an Andrew Cordell trick. So we're good there.
And who was the first person that taught you that? Like, because it's good getting question. Into that game. How did you first learn that?
Well, I what happened was, I mean, a number of different little learning. I was 8 years old. My dad was a stockbroker. And on the weekends, he would drive real estate in Lake Charles. That was learning. I read about Sam Zell when I was probably 30. That was putting together rental properties. He was an average guy, average IQ, terrible communicator. And I'm like, he became worth $5 billion. I didn't know any. Brian Tracy had been hustling stages for, I don't know, 75 years and wasn't a billionaire. I'm like, what public speaker is a billionaire? None of them. Which one of them are still having to hustle a stage? I'm like, I don't want to do this forever. I mean, I respect what Tony Robbins has done. It's not what I want to do. I do not want to be bouncing on a stage in front of people crying when I'm 75 years old. Like, it's not a good look for Mick Jagger. I don't think it's going to be a good look for me. So I'm like, bro, you know how long I can buy real estate? Forever.
It gets easier and easier.
28 years old.
And it gets easier and easier. And, you know, let alone the availability because of the way historically we treat mortgages and lending with this 50-year mortgage, for example, the leverage of your money compared to owning your house cash, what you could buy with the cash on a $1 million home in California will retire your grandchildren.
I will say this, though. I think that, you know, because we talk about stage, the literal stage is hustling. But I mean, you're on a stage right now. You're on a podcast stage. You do stage at 10X. The stage is anywhere you're communicating a message. When I say stage, that's what I'm referring to. But I think you, and this is what I want to go back to, because I agree with you 100%. Chasing the physical stage is a brutal existence. It's powerful to create momentum and brand and knowledge. But at some point, like I was trying to illustrate, is that you took that next step to say, okay, how do I leverage this 200 days that you're doing into something higher, better leveraged, less stages, more reach, smarter choices within that use of time. So like what I see is that you combine that knowledge that the visibility even that you did online and then said, okay, how do I take that ability to communicate? Because you also have the ability to communicate an opportunity better than most people to say, here are the numbers, here are the breakdown, here's what it is. And then it feels so approachable in how you've done it. And so you're still on stage, but you're on a much different, highly leveraged stage. So you started thinking about your time better used on different pieces. And so that, I think that's where the brilliance came into play, is that you still, because if you remove your ability to be on stage, then you're not communicating something. You just chose different types of visibility, but you're still communicating this ridiculously valuable message that feels approachable by the masses.
Yeah, no, good point. Because I, you know, you're right. It became in 2012. It was no longer a physical stage. It was online, using Facebook. But I was 52 or 53 years old when I first saw social media, and not many 53 year olds grabbed it. And I saw it as way like, oh, I don't have to travel anymore. I can shrink time. I had 13 people on a live Facebook call in 2013. And I went to my wife and I'm like, we about to get rich. She's like, what's happening? I said, there's 13 people. She's like, why is that so good? I said, because 13 is going to become 1300 and then 13,000. And now like we've raised, I don't know, $2 billion over social platforms. Raised. This is sticky money. This is not, people aren't buying a book from me. Which is cool. I've sold a bunch of books, tens of millions of books. But when somebody buys a book, the relationship ends pretty quickly. They buy the book. They get the book. Dave, as you know, they read the book or don't read the book, which is problematic. 83% of all those books are never read. Versus a guy says, I show him a real estate deal and he invests with me. My wife taught me into this, by the way, getting other people to invest. It wasn't my idea. They invest money with me, and now I pay them every month. We have a long-term ongoing relationship that is reciprocating both parties, them and me. It's much better than a customer.
Yeah, and the total addressable community, you know, one of the key words is Grant's community. And, you know, as I advise people, I have a billionaire client in real estate, tells me, oh, Dave, you got to help me get 1 million followers. I said, that you're not getting what I do. And so he finally works with me and he says, I get it. I said, oh, really? He goes, yeah, I want 7 followers. I said, yeah, I think you're getting it. What do those 7 followers look like? He says, I have 7 $5 million villas down in Exuma. I need 7 followers, 1 to buy each and every one. And, you know, thanks God I studied Shakespeare as well in history, because he said something thousands of years ago, the whole world is your stage, when it wasn't true. Now, for him, it is true today. The whole world knows Hamlet. They know Shakespeare. The whole world does. But for the common guys, the David Meltzers and the Rene Rodriguez and the Grant Cardones that aren't in the Hall of Fame like Virgil and Nick, right? For us regular guys, the whole world, more people watch me than Warren Moon. More people know me, recognize me than my business partner, the only black quarterback in the Hall of Fame now because of social media. Nick, go ahead.
Well, I think we're also talking about Grant is a mentor. There's a super mentor. Rene Rodriguez, I got to say, he didn't include the fact that he's always been the bass singer for the Temptations. I mean, that is a great voice.
That is a great voice.
But having said that, you know, to me, where I'm at is the money. Money's great, but the money's never going to replace the sense of fulfilling what, if you will, God's purpose for you to help other people find purpose and meaning and connection. How many people have made their billions, not you, Grant, but and they commit suicide because they don't feel connection. So to me, you have to wrap that combination of great ambition and the particular skill set that Grant Cardone has that I don't necessarily have at the same level, and say, how will I influence and help people find meaning, find connection as well? You need both of them. And one stage is definitely television and all the different new technologies to reach more people. But don't lose sight of that as part of your sense of happiness. Because what I've heard from Dave Meltzer is you sabotaged yourself when you had $100 million and you found a way to dig deeper, which I also see with our mutual friend Lee Steinberg, to say, wait a minute, what will not change? So I just think it's really important to include that in the discussion. You can make the billion, but make sure that it fulfills you and helps other people find their treasure as well.
You can't fill that God, the God-sized hole with something other than God. You can't fill it with money.
That's right.
You can't, and too many people try to fill that God-sized hole with something other than God.
Yeah, and on the other end of that, I would just suggest that there are a lot of people out there trying to serve other people that have not served themselves yet.
Thank you.
It's a balance. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that I still want to get better at everything I do. I wanted to share this with you because, you know, I bet you everybody here, including Grant Cardone can think of the interesting things that we once thought of as coincidences that have informed us in life. My father's mentor was Arnold Toynbee. Speaking of history, probably the greatest historian of the 20th century. He wrote 14 volumes, 3 million words from 1932 to 1962. And here's what he said. 21 great civilizations, all of them dying, including Western civilization. And he said the key thing is what he called to measure them by challenge and response. Nick Lowry responding to being cut 11 times and then coming back, getting back off the floor, which, Grant, you've talked about a lot, right? You get your butt kicked, but then you learn and you move on. So number one is challenge and response. But within that, he said the key thing is when you look at civilizations and I look at cultures, it is the cultures that die. And I'm talking about America today. They've forgotten to honor the creative minority. When the majority starts to sabotage and bully the creative minority, the ones that come up with entrepreneur ideas, the ones that come up with new music, new art, new ways of looking at the world, new answers, that's when that civilization dies. And we've got to recognize that, I think, today. Otherwise, we're going to cut off the people that have new ideas that might not agree with everybody. Heaven forbid it be something new. And help us revitalize this country and hopefully be the example for the world.
Hey, Grant, when you think about the first big victory that you had and then all the victories that you've had after the fact, what were the biggest things that stand out to you on the overcoming the difficulties of the first big win? And then what did you have to change in your approach to stay on top?
Probably the biggest victory I had... these are spiritual, you know, victories more than, you know, in the physical universe. But you look, the first day I had a drug problem from 15 years old till 25. Mm-hmm. And those first 30 days, dude, being off of drugs was like, OK, I can do this. I'll tell you another victory I had when I was making $3,000 a month. I couldn't live on it and I couldn't get it. I think I was making $2,000 a month. And the first month that I made a decision, I'm going to make $1,000 more. That was probably the biggest money I've ever made in my whole life. The most important money was going from $2,000 to $3,000. Cause I'm like, okay, I'm in control here.
Nice.
prior to that, I'd been blaming it on everything else. There's been so many of these along the way, so many turning points. There's not one ever. There's never been one. There's been a bunch of them. And a lot of losses, dude, a lot of people, they weren't physical losses like Dave going from 100 to zero. I don't recommend it.
I don't either.
David doesn't either. You guys don't have to do that. I'll bet you money somebody got in Dave's head right before this and said, you know, Dave, bigger's not better. I don't know if that's true or not, Dave. We can talk about it offline. Yeah. The thing was, all the people that counted me out, dude, I cannot tell you. Now, this might just be immature. I don't think this is a God thing. I think it's immature. I'm admitting it. So the number of people that have discounted me, Ralph, Rob, Bob, Mark, like I even know their names, right?
Sing them.
The haters along the way, the people that tried to betray me along the way, the people that walked away, that counted me out, Bob Moore.
A universal thing. I bet you everybody here has had betrayal. It's part of
human nature.
March.
Yeah. I would be a tenth of who I am today had it not been for those people. So I think those people are gifts, too. It's not the people that acknowledged me and believed in me and supported me. I hear people talk about that all the time. Oh, my team. Dude, I'm telling you, the people that counted me out, much more useful to me.
Yeah, and they protect us in so many different ways. They laugh at us. They scoff at us. They make fun of us. And then they applaud you and tell you, I knew you could do it. They ask for a job or a loan. Loan, that's the worst part of being rich.
Hey, can you introduce me to so-and-so?
Exactly. That's why I started Meltzer Funding. It literally gave me a place to say, oh, you need money? Here's a link. Apply. Because my money is as good as a bank's money. And I'm not going to, as friends, go anywhere a bank isn't going to go as well. But Grant Cardone... the impact that you're having is aligned with my mission. It's a simple mission to empower others to make a lot of money, to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. And one of the things you can tell by the money mindset, the abundant mindset, is that you can't give what you don't have. So stop making excuses of why I don't have it because I'm so giving. Well, if you're really so giving, then you got to bust your balls and do the work and make a shitload of money and give it all away like Warren Buffett. That's good. That's good. That's a guy that's going to impact the world.
Yes.
And he's doing it because he makes a lot of money. And I love this type of compassionate capitalism because I know the intentions of Grant and his wife, by the way, that they have the same mission as me. We're here to impact people so that they can live their best lives, so that they can enjoy the desire that they must be what they can be. Like the three champions that join me, the great champion, we've had them all here, billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, and entertainers. But at the top of my heap lies Grant Cardone because of the impact he's having on others. Thank you for joining us. Promise me we'll get to see you more often.
100%, Dave. I'll be dropping into the Wynn Hotel more often.
We love it. 10 times that, my brother. Take care of the incredible Grant Cardone here.
Appreciate you guys. God bless you guys. Merry Christmas.
Bless you, brother. Thank you for your time.